Hey everybody, Stu Smith here going live. Hope you are well. We are on a Monday morning. Did leg day today. Always good to mix it up a little bit because Monday is not necessarily International Chest Day. In fact, if you want a bench in a busy weight room, do your leg days on the days everybody else does bench. There you go. Problem solved. But anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about something that I had a conversation with a couple of guys that were getting ready to do a selection weekend. And they've been training for this for months, probably even, you know, close to a year even for this specific event, because it's going to allow them to get into a training program and selection, therefore, you know, after that. So there comes a time when you've done all the training, you can't get stronger, you can't get faster, and you just have to get tougher. That is what the mindset you need to have going into those type of training programs that is going to be the most helpful, because you can pull on that whenever you're tired or whenever you feel like, all right, I can't run anymore, but you still run. So you've done all the training. Now it's time to put it to the test and see how you do. And that's your game day. You know, you need to bring the right mindset into that. And with that little saying right there, I can't tell you how many people have told me over the years that they relied on that really heavily when they were doing a grueling ruck or 4 mile timed run, or they were in a group and they didn't want to get separated from the group, so they pushed a little harder just so they would stay in that group and not get, you know, in the extra credit squad or the goon squad, we used to call it. And it's pretty powerful. You know, it's one of those up there with, like, you know, you don't have to go work out at 5:30 in the morning in the winter. You get to, right? So just a little rephrasing of a sentence can really bring a different mindset to you when you're trying to endure, you know, some of those events, because there is an answer. You need to prepare so well that your strength is where it needs to be, your conditioning is where it needs to be, you're ready for all the specific events, and now you just got to get tougher, because you're going to be tired, you know, especially if you're doing a 36-hour event or a hell week event, or just hell, just the first week of any selection program. That's where all the attrition is. So you got to bring it every day. So when there's no time to get stronger or faster, you have to get tougher. So check it out. In fact, I'll put the link to the article I wrote on that right here. You guys check that out, because it's a really good one. It's up on Stu Smith Fitness. And it just thoroughly explains that process. So let's see what we got here. Time to ask some questions if you got them. Seems to be a lot of info on SEAL pipeline, but there seems to be much less on the AFCRO pipeline. Yes, that is true. Just how it is. Do you have any resources you would recommend? Yes. There you go. And it's updated for Crow Stow. Let me see if it says that in here somewhere. These are just workouts that are going to help you prepare for whatever selection that you're going to endure. The IFT and the OFT, swimming with fins, using lead arm, trail arm. All those little things that you're going to have to do to get to and through the pipeline. So as far as the Air Force Crow pipeline, it's very similar to the PJ pipeline. You're going to go through dive school and jump school and, you know, a good portion of the same courses the enlisted guys do, but it's going to be a little bit different for the officers. There's going to be some more leadership training as well. Bigger picture type stuff. Yeah, this is a great answer. Check out the Ones Ready podcast. And you can ask them. They're really helpful too. Those guys are well read into the whole pipeline. And will you ask those guys, they're pretty good. And while you're over there, check out the podcast I did with them. It was a lot of fun. Those guys were really good. I'm really impressed with what they're doing over there. Just started training pull-ups again since my shoulder healed and went from 15 plus max reps to 10, gained 15 pounds in the meanwhile. Well, that's the problem. 15 pound extra pull-ups is not good. So my suggestion is the next time you get a shoulder injury is don't neglect other activities. You can do leg days, you can run, you can bike. You know, if it hurts to run because you're bouncing, then do something else. But yeah, you got to stay moving, work on something else. So, yeah, just start working again, add more cardio to your day, get moving just like you did before. Just don't go too crazy on the pull-ups if that's what hurt it. I will say this, a lot of people hurt themselves with pull-ups because they let themselves like fully dead hang and relax their shoulders, right? You want to keep your shoulders engaged. You know, like instead of just relaxing and everything's just hanging on by your rotator cuff muscles, like pull them in. So you're still doing a full pull-up, but your shoulders are somewhat engaged back there, so they're not completely relaxed on a dead hang. A lot of people screw that up, especially if they're doing butterfly pull-ups or whatever the hell those are, and kipping pull-ups. Sometimes those will cause someone to go all the way down forcefully to a point where they really hurt themselves. Usually a rotator cuff muscle is what's happened. 15 pounds of muscle. Okay, that's good. That's good. I'd like to know if while doing them, I should do dead hang every rep or should I keep an active hang? Oh, I think we just answered that. I wouldn't do relaxing dead hangs ever. I mean, there is very seldom time when I am just relaxing on a bar. If I am, my feet are on the ground, but you know, you don't want to just sit there and hang completely relaxed because it does stretch rotator cuff muscles probably to an extreme in some cases, especially if you have tight shoulders. But it you can work on your mobility a little bit too, and that will be a little less dangerous for you. Morning, Stu. Curious what advice you have for obtaining letters of recommendation for SOAS packages. My recommendation is, you know, I've been on those boards and read letters of recommendation, and we were always really excited to read a letter from someone who actually knew the person versus someone who was like, yeah, I don't know this kid. You know, we had a 10-minute talk, and that's it. Yeah, I remember when I was a young kid trying to get letters of recommendation for the Naval Academy. And I got, you know, from my English teacher, math teacher, got one from a coach and a preacher, you know, that knew me thoroughly. Now, I happened to get another one from our mayor, who was my neighbor. And I thought that was just kind of he kind of knew me. He saw me grow up and, you know, I never was in trouble around him or anything. Never did anything screwed up. But I didn't really know him that well, so it felt a little weird asking him for a letter recommendation. He was glad to do it. But I would say try to get those who know you. Because I will tell you this. If somebody on that board knows the SEAL that you, let's say you asked a SEAL who doesn't know you, and you had like a 15-minute talk with them, and you asked them to write a letter of recommendation for you. Nothing wrong with that. However, yeah, I remember one time it was kind of on the line of whether or not this guy was going to go to the next group. And one of the guys called the SEAL officer that gave him the letter recommendation and just asked him about it. One, he barely remembered. Two, he goes, oh, yeah, I did that like 4 or 5 months ago. And, yeah, we just had a cup of coffee and chatted. So right there, it just told the board that he didn't really know this guy. You know, 15-minute talk, that was it. So we didn't really take that letter recommendation seriously. Other than, you know, it was a buddy that recommended him. You know, we all have kind of been asked to do that. I personally kind of have a standard of like, I need to see you work out with us before I write any letter recommendation. Or at least give you a PST, you know. So there you go. Hope that helps. What essential equipment should you have if you have to work out from home to prep for special ops? That's a good question. In fact, I have written some articles, and I even have a whole section on Stu Smith Fitness. You scroll down, you'll see home gym. And this is just some sandbags, TRXs, calisthenics, pull-up bar, dip bar, a ruck, place to swim. But yeah, you can see out all these workouts are minimal equipment. And they're everything from weight vests, sandbags. I like a TRX. Yeah, place to swim, pair of fins. Yeah. I mean, we do a lot with very little equipment. In fact, most of the equipment that we use, I fit in my truck. And if we're lifting weights, it's a barbell and some plates. So kind of up to you if you want to add in weight. But you can also add weight with, you know, kettlebells, sandbags, weight vests, pull-up bar, dip bar. In fact, I have an article when the gym is closed, how to make, let's see, gym closed, homemade, homemade sandbags, Stu Smith. Oh, this is even better. You guys got to check this out because we even made a homemade squat rack for, it was on a pull-up bar. We hooked chains and J-hooks to it, and you can see it in that article. I just posted a picture of it, and it's a barbell hooked into those J-hooks, and it's about shoulder height for people, and you get up under it, and somebody's got to spot you by, usually if you just stand up, the J-hooks fall off, so got that taken care of, but getting back under it, somebody's got to spot you with the J-hooks, but that's a fun one. That was probably my best invention during COVID, was coming up with a squat rack system because we lost our gym. And, you know, to be honest with you, we've never been back. We have just been doing more with less ever since, working out in the winter, and just because we found it to be, it sucked, but it was good. You know, it was all about really kind of making us a little tougher, a little climatizing us to much of the weathers that we are going to have to work in, hot and humid, cold, all of it. Hey, Stu, dealing with some lower back tightness after leg day squat workout. Do you have any advice on how to, I should go with my week training with this? Yeah, just be careful. you know, I always, I heard somebody say, might have been a meme. It was pretty funny, but every exercise, a back exercise, if you do it wrong enough. So either maybe you weren't ready to do heavier squats that you did, or maybe it's your form that was screwed up, but typically it's usually one of the two, and it's either a back injury from improper technique, or it's back soreness from just doing squats for the first time in a while. So I think you need to differentiate the two on that, on which one it is. If it's more of an injury, then that may, you may want to be a little more delicate with that and lay off any weighted squats. You could probably still do non-weighted squats, you know, just air squats and lunges, and just add in a mobility day. I would probably, if I had a back injury, and let's say it was a Monday today, and we did a leg day, and I hurt my back lifting. Let's say I deadlifted and something just wasn't right. Could have been poor form. Could have just been, you know, I was tight and picked up something and my back went out. Right, it happens. I would change what I was going to do tomorrow and make it a mobility day, where I just do 5 minutes of cardio, 5 minutes of stretching and foam rolling and massage tooling, and do that for an hour. And that would be my workout. And then see how I feel after that. And if you feel better after that, you could add in the upper body day that you had skipped for that day, or just bump everything to the right and do your upper body day on Wednesday. That'll give you another day before you do legs again. So I would try that. I'd try to see if a plank pose hurts, or hanging from a pull-up bar, see how that feels. That might cause some relief for you. But yeah, that's how I would treat it if it was my back. I missed last week's live, so now that I'm here, just wanted to remind you of, oh, well, thank you. That's very nice of you. Glad to do this. This is fun. You guys give me some great ideas to write articles. In fact, I think one of my latest articles was from you guys. Somebody had asked a question about, let's see, I can't remember what it was now. Most recent, let me see, my latest article. So I did one on a pull-up deadlift workout. I did, should I be lifting in my workout routine? How effective is exercise in preventing common illness, hospital stay? Yeah, that wasn't one. That was a study I read. Did one on CPR. This leg day workout. How to add weights for a fitness test prep. I think that might have been one of you guys. But anyway, up on, this is on military.com. I write a ton of articles for them. 3 a week, actually. And you can see a huge list, because I've been doing it for over 20 years. So you do the math on that. 3 a week for 50 weeks. You know, 150 articles times 20 years. Yeah, I have that many articles. So it's very rare that someone asks a question that I haven't written about. So that's why I tend to answer a lot with articles, because I know I've written about it somewhere in the past. But it may not specifically address your needs. So if you can, be a little more specific with the question. Or if you don't want to get that specific, just email me, stu@stusmith.com, and I can answer you a little clearer that way. So, and it doesn't have to be public, especially if it's going to take longer than a few minutes to answer. Let's see. Flavio with the hurt shoulder says, been doing your lightweight shoulder, and it's really helped me. However, I read online that your thumb down lateral raise are not recommended for shoulder health. Any thoughts on that? Well, remember, it's only 5 pounds. So my lightweight shoulder is a 5-pound exercise. It's not like you're doing it with a 25 or 30-pound dumbbell, which I would not do. 5 pounds or rubber bands. I personally have been doing it for 25 years, all of those. And my shoulders are healthier now than they were before I injured it and learned those drills. You know, I learned it from a physical therapist. Maybe it's an updated version, because I will tell you this, you know, one of the problems with fitness, but it's also good too. I mean, it's kind of science, you know, there's always some study that disproves some other study, right? There's always some exercise that is discovered to be bad for you, even though people have been doing them for 25, 50 years. Not sure what to tell you. You can skip it if you don't feel comfortable doing it. But like I said, it's a 5 pound dumbbell. You know, as long as you're not feeling pain when you do it, it's working down there. When I have lower back pain or tightness, I stretch my hamstrings. Usually helps a lot. Absolutely. Yep. Hamstring stretching is very helpful. Ace, do any tips on recovering in between two-a-days, morning weight training and evening running? Thanks. Just all the recovery techniques that you can think of. Your big two are sleeping and eating. So, sleeping and eating are probably going to cover. In fact, here's an article on recovery for optimal performance. Probably covers 90% of your recovery right there, just by eating well and sleeping well. After that, everybody spends most of their money on this missing 10%, which is massage guns or massages and foam rollers and hot, cold contrast baths. You name it. Everything's out there. Supplements. So it's a big business. That missing 10% is very big business. But if you eat well, sleep well, you may not even need that other 10%. I personally like, to swim as part of my recovery, do some treading water as part of my recovery, especially if my hips are tight. So there's other things that you can do, stretching, foam rolling, mobility work. You know, all of those are really good ways to add to your recovery. Hydration is another big one. That's part of nutrition, though. So that is where I would be if I were you. But that's a good cycle. I like lifting in the morning, running at night. But I also like running in the morning and lifting at night. So change things up a little bit. See if that works for your schedule, if it allowed for your facilities and timing and all that. Hey, Stu, do you have any updates for your guys on the 18X pipeline? What did they make of SFAS? How'd they fare? We had several guys get into the 18X ray process, and they sent back pictures of them completing the SFAS selection, and they are in the pipeline now. So this is very exciting. We had one guy that passed selection but did not get selected. So there is a finish but not pass. I can't remember exact term of it they use, but basically, you guys hear me? I think I just turned off my radio. There we go. He was an E5 going in, and they thought he should have more leadership than he showed in the training. He did well physically, but I guess, it's pretty subjective. Some of that training pipeline is pretty subjective. So they will test your leadership if you're more advanced rank. They will see how good of a team player you are, especially when it comes into team training. So there's some subjective trainings that get part of that process, as well as objective physical ability, land nav, stuff like that as well. So provided one lifts and is dedicated strength base, how much correlation is there between great runners and great ruckers? Should rucking supplement your running plan or replace it? Especially if you're going Army SF or Rangers, you definitely want to be adding rucking. But I wouldn't add too much rucking. Like, I wouldn't do it every day. I would do your running and rucking combined to, you know, at least 5 or 6 days a week. Take one day off. Do some mobility work on that day. But we typically do this. We ruck and swim with fins on leg days. So all the guys that are heading to like Air Force PJ or Navy SEAL recon stuff, they will practice swimming with fins. Sometimes they will ruck again later that day, but my Army guys, I don't really bother them with swimming with fins. We'll just put the ruck on every leg day. They're going to be doing a ruck. So we typically do leg days twice a week, but sometimes we'll do three a week. And we tend to make it more of a run-ruck combination that day, mixed with some lunges and fireman carries and stuff like that. So my suggestion is 2 to 3 times a week, ruck. And yes, you can replace a running plan with some rucking. I would say some of the best ruckers I've seen have been bigger guys, but you know, I have seen some smaller dudes that were great runners that everybody was like, yeah, let's see how you can ruck. You know, you can run a 12-minute 2-miler, but let's see how you ruck. And then they were great ruckers too. Some weren't, some were. So it really kind of depends on, I think, a lot of your athletic history. If you spent some time where you were used to load bearing or lifting, say you did heavy construction or landscaping work, you know, during the summers, you know, those things where you're carrying 50-pound bags all the time or whatever, those guys tend to do real well rucking because they have gotten used to load bearing. So absolutely, there's a definitely strength correlation to rucking ability. Does it have to be strength in a weight room? No. You know, if you're carrying big bales of hay around, that's good too. In fact, that's really good. I'd rather see that personally. Some of the strongest guys I've ever seen were just farm strong. And Joe, apologizing in advance. Okay. Have you had any guys train for Delta selection? What did you make of it and how they prepare? They rucked their ass off. It's not a dumb question. You know, we had one guy, and it was just, he missed the last ruck. I don't know how far it was. He thinks it was over 30, 40 miles, 35 miles, he thinks, just given the amount of time it took. And he passed it, but they told him he didn't pass it in the time that they had set up. So once again, and they don't tell you that time. So it's a very subjective process. I think at that selection, only two finished and got selected. I'm not sure how many started, but it was significant numbers, 20 plus. So it's a hard selection. But you will need to ruck your ass off. Get good at rucking. And operating, too. So, you know, it's not just physical. You have to be a really good indoor shooting level, CQB type good and relaxed when you go through that stuff. Thoughts on Normatec leg compression sleeves for recovery? Once again, that missing 10% money, that's where it goes. Not knocking it. I think compression is definitely the way to go for some recovery. Elevation, compression, all great. You know, that's why I like to swim. You know, I kind of go deep and get some leg compression down there as well. You know, doing some aqua jogging on the bottom. Jumping jacks, you know, on the bottom, And it's just some body compression as well. So it's not as tight as the Normatec compression, but I've had a lot of guys use them. I have personally never put them on. But, you know, I put them in that missing 10% category of recovery. Does that make sense? So let's see this article here. What were some of the things? Yeah, this is a pretty good breakdown. That article that I led with about when there's no time to get stronger or faster, you need to get tougher. You guys check that out. It's a fun article because it's everything from running faster, load bearing, logs, boats, rucks, equipment, buddy carries, swimming skills and speed, you know, grinder PT, obstacle course events, and of course, Hell Week. It's a fun one. So Vincent says, just did week two, day one of the Air Force program. Double passed this morning. Oh, that's a great workout. The double pass test, double PST. Yeah, we call it the IFT now in the Air Force. So initial fitness test, used to be called the PAST test. Reason why they changed it is they had an operator fitness test they created. And so it was PAST test and the operator fitness test. So they're like, you know, it doesn't kind of roll off the tongue that well. Let's do an IFT and OFT. Boom. Problem solved. Same test, just different name. The double IFTs. Second swim I did in fins. Oh, that's a good idea. I like that idea. What's the average time difference with and without fins for the 500 that you've seen? My recommendation is keep it the same. So I like to get guys down to a pace of 500 yards or even 500 meters. It's a little harder. 500 yards, 500 meters in 500 seconds. So that is a yard per second or a meter per second swimming with fins and swimming without fins. So do the math on this. That would be an 820, roughly, between 8 minutes and 820, 500. It's going to be a 16 minute, roughly, to 17 minute, 1,000. Take that out to 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, which at Bud, you're going to do 4,000 yard swims. So multiply that by four, you're still going to be in that 64 to 65 minute range for a 4 mile run, which I promise you is top 10% of the swims at Bud's. If you can do that, maybe even more, maybe higher. But you have to 85 minutes to fail that test in first phase. So my suggestion is don't even be under 75 minutes on the 4,000. So that's the pace I would set for longer swims with fins, that yard per second pace. That's going to do you really well. I will say this for the Air Force guys that are swimming with fins, doing that lead arm, trail arm swim. I've seen guys faster at that than using the CSS version of that, where they actually recover their arms and turn to breathe with it. I think maybe the arms are slowing them down a little bit, but the lead arm, trail arm. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to make a video showing the difference between the CSS with fins and the lead arm, trail arm with fins. Then I'll probably even show a difference between lead arm, trail arm and turtle backing with fins, which is something that you'll do in second phase at Bud's. But yeah, it's the same. Long, yeah, my answer was a lot longer than what it could have been. Sorry about that. But yes, it is definitely the same test. And that's same time, and that's why. That's where you want to be. Just completed week two of your weight vest workout program. I've been using 15-pound vest to start. How heavy of a weight vest should I try to get to? You know what? I have found it to be, I had two weight vests. I had a 20-pound weight vest and I had a 40-pound weight vest. I found I like the 40-pound weight vest for rucking combinations, squatting, lunging, and doing push-ups. But I like the 20-pound weight vest for pull-ups. Now, you could do a 40-pound weight vest with pull-ups, but I mean, it is minimal amount of pull-ups that you're going to get. I don't like to go too heavy with pull-ups with a weight vest, mainly because I've seen people blow out their bicep tendons years ago, but they were doing crazy weights, like 50, 60, 75 pounds on a weight vest doing pull-ups, and they're already 210 pounds. So imagine 280, 300 pounds of pulling power that has to get done to break, you know, that pull-up barrier on those little bicep tendons. And next thing you know, that bicep just goes right off the bone. So you got to be careful going too heavy with that. So that's why I've always gone 20-pound weight vests, 25 max for pull-ups, and 40 for other exercises like push-up, squats, lunges, and rucking. Sometimes instead of a ruck, I'll just use my 40-pound weight vest for the ruck portion of a Spec Ops triathlon. Glad you're back there, Scudder Buster. Good job. Just got into summer seminar. Ah, nice. Yes. In fact, I have some videos on summer seminar. USNA summer seminar. First of all, you're going to take the CFA when you're there, so you definitely want to crush the CFA. This is a fun video that I made a couple of years ago. I think we had a COVID issue where summer seminar was virtual, which really sucked. But check out this video that I'm posting in the comment section. It's me leading the workout that I do every year at summer seminar. And there's one event in there that you have to prepare for. Now, you're not going to be graded on it, but I promise you it will help you with your Navy PFT when you get to the Academy, because the Academy fitness test is plank poses, cadence push-ups, and a mile and a half run. However, to get through summer seminar or get to the Naval Academy, you really need to crush that CFA workout. And, you know, I gave away a CFA workout last week, which I don't have anymore this week. But it's a good one. You can check it out. Check it out here, CFA, if you're not familiar with it. I came up with a CFA clinic that was a lot of fun. Let's see, Service Academy candidates. So yeah, check this out. This is a good one for you. So it's just me walking you through all the events of the candidate fitness assessment and helping you with techniques of those. So check out that article and the video I showed you, and you'll see the kind of level of fitness that I would recommend being in before you go to summer seminar. But if you do that CFA program, you'll be there. What do you think a good strength number at RDLs is? You know what? That's a good question. I tend to not go too heavy on the RDLs. I think I did some the other day, like 185. And I tend to do it with kettlebells. We have this heavy kettlebell that's like, I think it's like 88 pounds. So it's pretty big, heavy kettlebell. So I'll do a lot of kettlebell RDLs with that. But if you have any aches or pains in your lower back, sometimes those RDLs will definitely let you know about them. So make sure you're really braced hard and, perfect form for that hip hinge that is the RDL. So it's kind of up to you. I don't go too heavy on those, but I will go heavier on deadlifts though. I did something good. I bought one of your books on Amazon, sent it to a kid I know in Serbia. Oh, that's cool. He's looking to join the specialist airborne unit there. He said it's helping a lot. Great. Well, that's cool. Glad it's helping people. Any Stu Smith formulas for increasing breath holds? Any tips to prevent mask from fogging up? Yes, I have one great one for that. A lot of people do spit in the mask and just let it clear up. That'll hold you for a little while, but if you're working out with that mask, you're going to create some heat. And next thing you know, you've created some more fog. So a real good one, especially on long scuba dives, we used to do this, and long swims, you know, when you're in there for a couple of hours, you put toothpaste in it. So just rub the standard, you know, toothpaste, not the gels, but the, you know, white toothpaste. Rub it in there real good, wash it out. Make sure you wash it out pretty well, but it's going to leave a little film there that will not fog for you. Now, there's also some products out there called anti-fog, or you can Google it, you know, fog on mask prevention. What's it called? Yeah, a lot of people were using this too. Remember we had to wear a mask and they had glasses? Next thing I know, the glasses would get foggy. So they do the same thing with their glasses. So yeah, but if you Google it, there's some anti-fog products out there if you don't want to use toothpaste. I've always used toothpaste. Now, as far as formulas for increasing breath holds, I really don't play around with that. There are some out there. You can look at CO2 tables and go through all that stuff and play around with breathing. And a couple of my guys were doing it, and they got their breath holds up to like 3 minutes. I don't write about that stuff. I don't teach it. I'm just not really into that because I've just seen a lot of people, a lot of candidates kill themselves because they're doing breath hold training underwater. They pass out and they never come back up. So every year something happens like that. People die from shallow water blackout. So don't ever do it underwater. And if you want to get good at underwater swimming, the way to do it is to be efficient at underwater swimming. I have a YouTube video of me swimming underwater, giving you all my techniques that I know how to be efficient with it. And it is basically just me swimming underwater for almost 50 meters. Like the rules in my pool say you can't do a 50 meter swim. So I just did a like one length and three quarters of it coming back. So check out that and you will see four strokes to get across the pool. And that's what it takes to be efficient. So 4 to 5 strokes max. I think where a lot of people go wrong is they're just like, just cranking out their arms and kicking little flutter kicks the whole time. Don't do that. You get through that 50 meter underwater by gliding, not by pulling and kicking frantically. That's just a waste of energy. And you'll see it real quick. But you should be able to build up to 4 or 5 strokes max underwater in a 25-yard pool, just getting down there and not be winded when you get there. So we tend to practice single lengths underwater swims, and then we follow it up with a pretty hard freestyle. In fact, check out this, I call it the Air Force 50-50. You'll like this one. It's a really fun workout. So you've seen me do the 50-50 where it's 50-meter free, 50-meter CSS. But for the Air Force PJ training, I came up with a new one that is 25 underwater and 25 free. And then you do an easy 50 recovery swim. That can be a CSS. It can be a, you know, an easy pace, breathing every stroke freestyle. But check out this workout. Once again, it's a free workout. This will get you in better swimming shape and underwater swimming shape, and will help you be more relaxed when you're swimming underwater. But you got to do it efficiently. You can't just try to stroke it, you know, 15 strokes to get across the pool. It should be in as few strokes as possible. I've seen guys do it in three. So with a kick off the wall. Without a kick off the wall, the least I've seen is four. Almost five, four and a half. But it can be done. Let's see, you guys got any more questions for me? So we are in week 11 of our winter lift cycle. So winter lift cycle, we are on week 11. And this is just a 12-week cycle. So spring is coming. I'm getting excited. Always means nice weather. And means more calisthenics and cardio. But we're transitioning out of lifting heavy in a couple of weeks. But we're going to crush week 11. Going to crush week 12, and then on week 13, we're going to test and just see how well we did. Usually week 12, too, by the way, that's every fourth week in this program. It's a block periodization model. So we are going to do calisthenics and cardio week before we do the week 13 assessment, which is going to be a good one. Bench press, one RM, or body weight max reps. May do both. One day it's a one rep max. One day it's a body weight max reps. I've been playing around with 225, though I'm not 225. Just trying to max rep that. I got 10, trying to get 15 this next round. So almost had 11, but not quite. But I did get 14 of my body weight, which is like 205. So not bad. You know, I'm not like a super power lifter anymore. Used to be. So these numbers are a little bit humbling because used to do a lot more than that. But I'm also not trying to be a world-class power lifter either. But anyway, everybody's getting stronger. But we're still maintaining our cals and cardio too. For CSS, when do you start your exhale? I tend to start the exhale at the kick. So when I kick, hold that glide, I'm exhaling for one Mississippi, two Mississippi, pull. I'm turning to breathe and I'm inhaling right there. If you're struggling to catch your breath during swimming, there's an article I want you to read. And this is just part fun, but it's also for real. And it's titled, "Dude, You're Not in Swimming Shape." But read this. It's definitely a good one to read. So when I was doing powerlifting, I was in the, I never broke 400 on bench, but I weighed like 185 and was able to do over two times my body weight. So I was like 385. On my bench, and then always never broke 500 on squats or deadlifts, but I was in the 400s, like 425, 450 for both of those. And then we also had clean and jerk, and I did get 315 as a clean and jerk. So that was pretty good. Yeah, that was in my late teens, early 20s when I was doing that. But I did get my bench numbers back up when I was at the teams, just had kind of like a team bench press contest. And so I pulled out a two times body weight on that one. So that was fun. Let's see. Yeah, my high school, we actually had a powerlifting team, and we were pretty good. It was fun. I used to wrestle during that time of year, and then, you know, they started the powerlifting team. I'm like, wait a second. I can go into the weight room and get a letter. Plus, I was going to lift anyway, so it just seemed like a really cool thing to do. Plus, I didn't want to lose 20 pounds to go wrestle. When I've been working really hard to be a football player. So in hindsight, I probably would have realized I was going to be an average sized guy and stuck to wrestling and baseball instead of trying to play football in college. Cause you know, there's only so much big I can get. So anyway, it worked out. I was glad I did what I did, played rugby in college and was able to prepare for Spec Ops life afterwards, which was a good thing, which was helpful doing, you know, something that had a little more cardio into it. Let's see. We got any more questions? Because I am getting ready to go start my day and working. So tomorrow I'll be back. And I got some new videos for you. If you want me to critique your CSS, you can send it to me, stu@stusmith.com. Happy to critique your videos for you. Let me see. Let me take off this thing here. But check out stusmithfitness.com. I have articles, books, ebooks, coaching. If you need help with any of that stuff, I'm there to help. Free stuff as well as stuff that supports the program. So I appreciate whatever you choose. You guys have a good one, and I will chat with you tomorrow with some good CSS critique show tomorrow. Bring your questions. I'll bring answers. We'll see you later.